But good morning. If I didn't introduce myself earlier, I don't know if I did. My name is Chris. I'm a pastor and elder here at Resonate, and I'm glad you're with us on this Easter. And judging by the music, hopefully you realize we did say last week, Sunday's coming and we will celebrate. And so we are here for celebration. But what if Easter wasn't just a one-day celebration? What if Easter today really does change everything about you? The kind of change that moves from fear to freedom, from grief to joy, from stuck to alive. Like we've spent the last few weeks, I'm gonna lower this. This feels a little high right where I'm standing, sorry. Whoever, Trey, is that you? I don't know. Okay, sorry, EJ. We've spent the last few weeks and we've reflected on sort of the suffering, the sorrow of Lent, and we've been real about it. I think we've purposely allowed us to sort of sit in those moments, to sit in the struggles and hardships of life. But at some point, there really is a true, good, right answer to all of it. That Easter isn't just about remembering something that happened a long time ago. It's about living into the power of the resurrection, even today. Not just a reminder of the past, a promise for today, a promise that's alive and transforming your reality. Peter speaks of Jesus as a living hope. There's something alive in him that brings us hope today. And we've been walking through Matthew for years now. And this morning, finally, we're going to get to the resurrection of Jesus. And next week will be our final Matthew message. So all you men going on the men's retreat, sorry, you're going to miss the finale to the whole book. This event's not just a historical truth, but a living, breathing reality. Jesus is alive, and because he's alive, it changes everything. And we will see in Matthew today a unique repetition around the word fear, the Greek word phobe. It's in there four different times in just a short collection of verses. And we're reminded that fear doesn't get the final word either. Jesus does, and because he's alive, you and I can live without fear, perhaps worry, grief, or at least there's an answer to it. They don't have the final word anymore. Jesus does. So I'm going to read through our text real quickly, and then we'll dive in. Now, after the Sabbath, towards the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, and an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes white as snow. And for fear of him, the guards trembled and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid. For I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has risen, as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell the disciples that he has risen from the dead, and behold, he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. See, I have told you." So they departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to tell his disciples. And behold, Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came up and took hold of his feet and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me. And while they were going, behold, some of the guard went into the city and told the chief priests all that had taken place. And when they had assembled with the elders and taken counsel, they gave a sufficient sum of money to the soldiers and said, "Tell all people, his disciples came at night and stole him away while we were asleep. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." And so they took the money and did as they were directed. And this story has been spread among the Jews to this day. And so we get this opening. The sort of starting point of the story here is that the women come to the tomb. And they are heavy with grief and loss. They have come expecting a body. One to mourn over. They come somber and quiet, early morning. I don't know what most people expect when they come to a cemetery, but it's going to be quiet, at least most mornings. But instead, this morning, they are met with something completely different, this supernatural event. The ground shakes, an angel appears, a stone is rolled away. Can you imagine the surprise that morning? Where everything in their world, in some ways, was flipped upside down. We should know the resurrection begins with fear. And we all know what it's like to face unexpected things, the phone call you were not expecting, that you didn't see coming, the bad news, the fear of what's next. And the women in the story were walking into the tomb expecting death and sadness. And they were shaken to the core. And that's the question I think that we have to wrestle with too. what happens when we are worried about our future, our health, our relationships, what fears we face. A fear arises from the unknown. The resurrection challenges what we know and confronts us with the reality that things are beyond our control. The truth that shakes us to the core. Fear is common when change, loss, uncertainty, and these women came to the tomb carrying that grief, the finality of death. Maybe the fear of the unknown. They've been following this Jesus for years, perhaps, and now he's dead. What does the future hold? What do we do next? What is our hope? We thought this was the one who would be king. What happens now? And it becomes a question for us. What fears do we carry today? What are our struggles that have left us overwhelmed or uncertain? For some, fear takes the shape of worry about what's coming next, maybe a fear of the future, maybe a fear of a failure in your job, a fear of not being able to provide, a fear of what's next for your own health. How am I going to make it through? What's going to happen? Maybe you're sitting here today worried about your future, whether it's the uncertainty of our economy right now, or your job stability, or the big unknown questions that are facing you. Maybe you have a low-grade fear of rejection, whether it's personal relationships, professional lives, whatever it may be. We're afraid we're going to be judged and not measure up. Afraid if people really knew the real me, they wouldn't love us, they wouldn't accept us, they wouldn't keep us around. It might cause you to avoid situations, conversations, opportunities because you're afraid of being rejected. Maybe it's one step forward from that, the fear of failure. Being constantly worried if you're actually good enough, achieving enough. You stay up at night wondering if you've done enough or whether you're on the right track. You've been so afraid to fail that perhaps you've been playing it safe through your whole career, your relationships, your dreams. Maybe you're stuck because of a fear of change. Even though the status quo is clearly not working, it's the devil you don't know is worse than the devil you know, and you're afraid of what might happen when you take the next step. A career change, a move, even opening up to someone in your life that you've been prompted to. Have you been afraid to make a change, even though you know something needs to shift? A job, a relationship, even how you see yourself. Maybe your fear is conflict, and it's holding you back. The thought of confrontation or tension just causes you to freeze. It keeps you silent. You avoid conversations you know that need to happen. You avoid difficult conversations, maybe with a spouse, a friend, a coworker, a fellow student, because you're afraid of the fallout. Maybe there's a fear of illness or death. It's a never-present reality. There's a nagging worry about your health or the health of loved ones, the inevitable path of time. Maybe it's a fear of inadequacy. Being exposed as less than we project about our appearance, our work, our roles, whatever it may be. You're working yourself to exhaustion, just trying to prove that you're good enough or to keep up appearances. Maybe one of those hit close to home. And what would it look like if we faced those fears? Believing that 2,000 years ago, Jesus the Messiah got up out of the grave. Because as we're about to see, the resurrection seems to redefine these fears. At a capstone, it tells us that the worst thing, the most unknown thing, the most uncontrollable thing that every human has to face, death itself, has become overcome. And where fear has been ruling life, joy can start to take place. The resurrection means that in the middle of our fears, just as the angels say, just as Jesus says, we have something spoken that says, do not fear. The worst thing, death itself, has been overcome. Because let's keep going. The angel said to the women, do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He's not here, he's risen. As he said, come see the place where he lay. Then go quickly, tell the disciples that he has risen from the dead, and behold, he's going before you to Galilee, where you will see him. See, I have told you. They departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy, and ran to tell the disciples. And behold, Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came up and took hold of his feet and worshiped him. And Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there you will see me." So that's the invitation. Do not be afraid. One of the most common phrases spoken in all of the Old and New Testament. And it wasn't just a nice phrase to sort of calm their emotions at the moment. It's a declaration. And it moves these women from fear to some great joy in response. The resurrection wasn't just about Jesus conquering death. It was overcoming even our own fears of death, our own fears of the consequences of life. It begins with fear, but it does not end there. And what happens when we realize, what happens for them when they realize the resurrection is true? They're filled with this joy, and it's not a fake joy. It would be a deep, long-lasting, life-changing joy that changes their perspective on all things. The women didn't just run to tell. They ran because there was a joy that couldn't just stay in them. And the resurrection is more than Jesus returning to life. It marks the beginning of God's restoration of the entire world. Matthew gives us probably one of the briefest resurrection collection of verses, more than some of the other gospel writers, and certainly some of the ways Paul unpacks the resurrection. But in so many ways, this is the beginning of a restored world. Paul will refer to him as the firstborn of the dead. This is the start. This is the beginning. This is the first fruits of something that all the reality is heading towards. By all putting their faith in Jesus, that we also will participate in that first fruit action, the resurrection action. That through his resurrection, we have access to God the Father. The very thing that sin had torn apart in the world, his victory over death is our victory as well. And so the women didn't just find an empty tomb, they found a new reality, a new creation, one where death no longer had the last word. And because Jesus is alive, you don't have to be afraid of what's ahead. The future isn't unknown anymore. Maybe the immediate future is, circumstances are, but the true future, the final future, is held in nail-scarred hands now. He's already gone before you, and he's not going anywhere. And because of the resurrection, you can stop wondering if God really loves you. You don't have to earn it. You don't have to fake it. Jesus spent his whole life showcasing how he loves broken sinners like you and me. And his resurrection affirms those words and his action. Jesus rose to say, "You are mine, not your failures, not your past. Nothing can change that." Because Jesus lives, failure doesn't get the last word. He beat death, the ultimate game over, and walked out of the grave. If he can rise, then by the same Spirit, so do we. No matter how many times you fall, grace says, "Let's get up again." And the resurrection means when life shifts, when plans break, when things fall apart, Jesus is already in the midst of it. We'll see Paul certainly affirm this, that he's not scrambling, he's not surprised. He works all things for the good of those who love him. He's making all things new, even the unexpected, even the crumbles and the ruins. And because he lives, we don't have to run from hard conversations. The cross brought peace with God. He gives us now this ministry of reconciliation. There's a work. This empty tomb encourages us to have courage, to live at peace with others, to speak truth, to walk in love, and to trust Jesus with those outcomes. Jesus didn't just beat death for himself. He did it for you and me. And that means death is not the end of the story. You can breathe deep, live bold, face forever without fear. In rising from the dead, Jesus didn't just prove his power. He proclaimed your worth as well. You're loved, accepted, chosen, not because of what you do, but because of who he is. And when life feels out of control, when the ground shakes, when nothing makes sense, remember Jesus walked out of the sealed tomb. The very moment that felt like the most uncertain, uneasy in the whole life story of Jesus is the one moment that he was completely in control. And that same power raised him is still at work today, carrying you into the unknowns. It reminds me of this common movie motif, where there's a main character who, in the storyline, becomes uncertain, afraid, sort of frozen, unable to move forward. And at that moment, someone who has died in her past appears and helps give confidence to the character, right? We see it in Star Wars, we see it in Harry Potter, but the most famous one I'm thinking of comes from the should have been nominated for many Oscars movie of Sing 2. I have children, these are the kind of movies I watch. And Sing was just building upon the amazing movie that Sing 1 was. And they added an additional character named Clay Calloway, who's voiced by Bono of U2 fame in the story. And Clay Calloway's character, he's this lion, and he had been super famous, a super famous singer at one point. And then you find that he has sort of imprisoned himself in his home, as almost a reflection of actually his emotional state as well, that he himself is sort of this emotionally locked off individual. And then you find out in the storyline that it's because his wife had passed away. And then Ash, this porcupine voiced by Scarlett Johansson, ends up going out to Clay Calloway's character and convincing him that they're doing this big performance, that he should really come out of retirement in some ways and come join them in this big concert. And so Clay Calloway gets convinced and decides to go to the concert, and the song that he was going to perform is a pretty famous U2 song of I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. And he's getting ready to go out, and he's scared, he's nervous, he decides he just can't go do that. He can't conquer his fears and step out. And so Ash, Scarlett Johansson, the porcupine, walks out and begins playing the song. And the crowd's sort of beginning to sing along, and eventually Clay Calloway's wife, in some apparition form, appears to him and eventually tells him, look, it's okay to go live. Go step out. And at that point, Clay Calloway walks out and picks up his guitar and says, I believe in the kingdom come, then all the colors will bleed into one. And yes, I'm still running. And if you know you too, this is a song that's about the kingdom of God and its coming, a place where everything will be made right. And then to me, this is more than just him singing about his wife. They other characters join in and singing and says, you broke the bonds, you loosed the chains, you carried the cross of my shame, oh my shame. And now I believe it. And the crowd responds with, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And I'm sitting there with my kids and tears are coming down my face. I'm like, this movie is just so beautiful. Those animated movies will get you sometimes. But as if to say, his wife is saying, you can carry on this life. And something about that moment just freed him. And I think the resurrection of Jesus has that sort of power. Certainly those are sort of the fictional stories, but this is why Easter matters. It's whether we believe there was a man, a God-man, who is the Messiah who got up out of the grave in a way that should transform our fears, our doubts, our struggles, and walk in a freedom and joy that we didn't know was possible. It's like waking up from your deepest, darkest sleep. And perhaps when you first wake up, it's disorientation. Then you let your eyes adjust, you realize it's morning, and the resurrection is like that sudden burst of light where everything shifts. And you see the world through a new lens. It produces hope in the fear. As we move forward, I want you to consider two very different responses that happen in the story. One that's transformed and they leave in acts of joy, and one that's frozen in fear or they try to suppress what they know to be true. Because we see that in the two different kind of collections of responses here. Verse 11, while they were going, behold, some of the guard went into the city and told the chief priests all that had taken place. And when they had assembled with the elders and taken counsel, they gave a sufficient sum of money to the soldiers and said, tell people, his disciples came by night and stole him while he was asleep. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. So So they took the money and did as they were directed, and this story has been spread amongst the Jews to this day. So these soldiers had witnessed the resurrection as well, at least the angel's pronouncement of it. They were the first there with the women to encounter the supernatural power of God, yet instead of embracing it, they were afraid. So much so, they tried to cover it up. And they were paid off to spread lies and about his body being stolen. They let fear paralyze them, keep them silent. And some of us act like the guards still to this day. Maybe your starting point this morning is that you don't believe the resurrection to be true. Maybe you've heard and seen the truth of Jesus. Maybe it's the first time you're really hearing about it even this morning. But you found ways to explain it away, to deny it, to reject it. And perhaps that's you this morning, and there's a challenge, I think, set before you. Will you respond like the soldiers in this story? Or will you respond like the women? Some of you have heard the story for years, and you believe it. You would say you believe it. You've seen glimpses of grace. You've stood near holy moments, but instead of leaning in like the women do, we step back. We shrink. We stall. We retreat into silence. And why? Because the truth can be costly. It might mean change in how we live, in what we value, in what we chase. It might mean stepping into vulnerability, owning our brokenness, letting the curated version of ourselves finally go. And maybe you've experienced something real, a nudge, a whisper, a prompting by the Spirit, a pull towards Jesus, but you've downplayed it. You've rationalized it away, and like the soldiers, maybe you've seen more than you're willing to admit and still stayed quiet. And faith feels dangerous. Not out of the sense of persecution. Most of us don't feel that sort of danger, but in a way that it might upend our life. If we truly surrender, and maybe it's easier to stay numb than to say yes. Some of us are not afraid of the resurrection's truth, but on the resurrection's invitation. Because if Jesus really rose, it doesn't just change eternity. It changes now. It means your comfort zone may not be your calling. It means you don't get to keep just living for yourself. There's a kingdom to live for, and then there's the fear that your doubts disqualify you. Maybe that's keeping you away, that you're just like, you know what, my faith, I've been all over the map. I've missed so many chances. I've said no to so many things in the past. Here's the thing. Jesus appears to these women and to the disciples, and they do not have perfect faith. It seems like none of them were really expecting the resurrection. It seems like all of them are still confused about the kingdom by Acts 1 when they're like, Jesus, so is now when you're going to usher in everything? They don't even know who should be included. They have a whole council halfway through the book of Acts to figure that out. There's no perfect faith. He came to those who were grieving, who were confused, who were afraid, and he came with peace. You don't have to fake it. You don't have to have it all figured out, but you do have to decide. Will you suppress the truth that's stirring in your heart, or will you step towards the one who walked out of the tomb with love in his eyes and your name on his lips? The soldiers walked away with silence and a story that wasn't true. But the women, they walked away with joy and with mission. And today, you get to choose what kind of story you'll tell. They don't bury what they've seen. They don't go silent. They are shaken, and who wouldn't be? I love that they leave with fear and joy. It wasn't like all the fear suddenly went away and they were just joyful fully. There was both, but they are awakened. And that awakening stirs something deeper than fear. That's faith. Enough faith to run, enough joy to speak, enough trust to move forward. They didn't need all the answers to take the next step. They just needed to believe that Jesus was alive and that his words and everything he had done for the 3 years that he might have interacted with them could be trusted and true. And that's still the invitation today. Resurrection is not something we just nod at as a good thing that happened. It is something we step into. It's not a doctrine to file away. It's a doorway into a new kind of life. And like the women at the tomb, we're called to respond, not with frozen fear, not with cautious skepticism, but with movement, to rise, to run, to speak, to follow, to carry the news that death has been defeated and Jesus is alive, not just as a story we believe, but a truth that shapes every part of who we are. So let me ask, if you believe Jesus is risen, where is he calling you next? Who needs to hear what you now know is true? What fear needs to be replaced with resurrection courage? The women didn't wait for perfect conditions. They just went. Because the good news was too good to keep. And maybe today that's your next step as well. As I said, the resurrection is not just about something that happens after we die. It's about how we live, because Jesus didn't stay in the grave. He rose to bring us life. Not just someday, not just in heaven, life now. He rose to free you from the grip of sin, the grip of fear, to break the weight of shame, to rewrite a story of failure, to walk with you through the unknown. And today you're standing where two groups stood on that first Easter morning. Some witnessed the miracle and walked away unchanged, too afraid to admit what they'd seen. Others were filled with awe and joy and they ran. So it's the same question. What will you do with the resurrection? Will you try to manage it? Keep it at arm's length? Explain it away? Tuck it in behind a safe version of faith that doesn't ask that much of you? Or will you receive it, like the women, and begin a whole new life? Resurrection people don't wait for perfect clarity. They follow Jesus with open hands. They live like freedom is real, like grace is enough, that death doesn't get the final word. So where is Jesus calling you to move forward, to trust, to speak, to act? You don't have to live defined by fear. The tomb is empty, the grave is defeated, and the risen King is calling your name. So go today as someone who has seen the risen Christ, bold, free, forgiven, and full of joy. Not because life is easy, but because Jesus is alive. So I'm going to invite up Sarah to lead us into a time of prayer and reflection on this, to just sit in it a little more in some silence, and then we'll continue to worship through song.